You're listening to Pod for Ham, a podcast from The Incomparable that's all about the musical Hamilton, taking it one track at a time through the original Broadway cast recording. Every episode features different groups of interesting people talking about a single track. Visit us on the web at pod4ham.com or follow us on Twitter at pod4ham.
Hurricane, there is quiet for just a moment. A yellow sky. When I was 17, a hurricane destroyed my town. I didn't drown, I couldn't seem to die. I wrote my way out.
Welcome back to Pod for Ham. The song today is Hurricane, aka Alexander Hamilton makes some bone-stupid decision. I'm Chip Sutterth.
I'm Monty Ashley.
I'm Casey Barber.
I'm Rachel Donner.
Spoilers, Hamilton makes a bad call in this song, and this is...
Does he really, though?
Yes.
Perhaps we'll have an argument on the subject, but this is, I think, distinctive on the original cast album for being the Alexander Hamilton / Lin-Manuel Miranda power ballad. And I'll say it right up front. It's not his forte, wouldn't you say?
I would wholeheartedly agree.
His meaning Lin-Manuel Miranda's?
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
This is my current favorite song on the cast album. So I would like you to elaborate on how you feel. Do you feel this is a bad song?
I will argue that it is a very powerful song. I'm actually speaking more to the performance. It's not the strongest of performances on the album, shall we say. I welcome disagreement.
I think it's fine. I have no complaints about the performance or the song. I don't really think of it as a power ballad so much as the culmination of all of Hamilton's flaws all coming together in one grand moment of hubris. Like, during this song, he actually says, "My prayers to God were met with indifference. I picked up a pen. I wrote my own deliverance." Then talks about how he couldn't die. He really believes that all he has to do is just vomit thousands of words out, and he'll solve whatever problem he has.
Which is ironic, considering he's always like, well, I'm going to die on the battlefield. No, I'm going to die next. Wait, I might die now. Oh, no, I'm never going to die, because I'll write this. It's fine. Yeah. It'll be fine.
His pride in his writing is such that it forces him, even after he looks at the saddest moment of his life so far, when his mother died and his whole island was crushed, the lesson he takes from that is, well, I got a pen, I'm basically God, time to fix this.
See, I sort of see it as a redux of the opening number, where that is from Burr's perspective about Hamilton, and this is Hamilton's own perspective of his life and how he got to where he was.
Oh, absolutely. This is his origin story that they waited very long to actually get into, the details of how his mother died, literally next to him on the bed.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally tragic, and it's totally his story. But yeah, we can go in one of two directions right now, and we can jump in the other direction a little later. Do we want to start with the execution of the song, or do we want to talk about the tragedy of Hamilton's story here in the song? Do we want to be Doylist or Watsonian here?
Well, I think we should start with the execution of the song, because I find that to be in direct opposition to what the song actually accomplishes in the show. Because I was making a little David what face when Monty was talking about it being his favorite, because this is the only song I actually actively skip on the cast album.
Ooh.
Wow.
And
That's bold.
I know.
Controversy.
I don't do it often. It's usually when I'm like running because I really want to get to the Reynolds pamphlet because everybody wants to get to the Reynolds pamphlet. But it has the distinction of being the only skippable song for me. And I think a large part of that is Lynn's performance and not the actual plot machinations that occur throughout the song, which I think he had to write the song. I think it's a brilliant way to do it, but it just, it's the only one that I'm like, about.
Casey, have you seen the show?
I have, and I've seen it with Lynn, and I've also seen it with Michael, whose last name I'm going to butcher, the new alternate for Javi.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Who has...
That's a deep cut.
Sorry, Lynn, he has like a much better voice than you when he sings this song. I'm so sorry. But it's...
Well, I've always said that people who were worried about Lynn leaving the show were possibly overrating Lynn the performer and definitely underrating Lynn the writer. Like, other people can sing his songs.
Oh, 100% agree.
Yeah. And he's not... He
Lynn is great fun to watch, but...
He's great fun to watch, and he performs this song better than, say, I would. you know, he actually has something resembling a vocal range. I do not, so I don't want to throw too many stones. But it's he is a natural rapper, and this is not the thing. This is not the thing. I saw this with John Rua as Hamilton, and. My wife and I were sitting in the back row, the very back row, that's all we could afford, watching the incredible scenic design of this song on the stage.
Yes, where, that was the direction that I was hoping to take this. Yeah,
okay.
Yes.
Well, I'll hand it off to you, Rachel, after I make the point that John Rua, his performance was certainly adequate. I don't remember much about it, though, because the staging kind of... carried me away. This is a powerful song, but it almost seems to be immune to performance because of what happens in the lyrics and what happens on the stage. I don't know, Rachel.
Yeah, I loved the staging of this number, and I would probably equate it a little bit to the Russell Crowe Javert performance of Stars.
Wow.
Because from Lynn's perspective, because again, like we said, Lynn is not the greatest power singer out there, but the I think the moment of Javert and the moment of Hamilton here is kind of a reckoning for both of them. And I feel like there's a because we know Lynn loves Les Mis, I feel like there is definitely some influence there from Stars, and that kind of reckoning and the staging kind of reflects that. It's very similar in terms of being at the eye of the storm and the water imagery all around him. And then you have Russell Crowe, who can't quite sing as well as he should for that part. So I feel like all
or
of that,
indeed any part.
Yeah. So I feel like all of that comes together, and there's a lot of similarity there between those two songs and those two performances.
Well, all I can say is I have not seen the show because I am trapped here a million miles away in Seattle. Well, I'm not trapped, but you know what I mean. I have not seen the show.
It's coming for you though.
It'll be here eventually. Side note, the way they try to get you to buy tickets to every local theater company that's going to have Hamilton is buy season tickets now. So next year, you can be first in line to buy season tickets. So that when
exactly.
Hamilton comes along, you can be first in line to buy tickets for that. So all I know is the version on the original cast album, which means all I know is Lynn's version. And this is one of the only songs I actually listen to on its own, separate from the rest of the musical.
Well, since you already like it from that perspective, the staging is going to blow you all away, I suppose. Because I agree with Rachel 100%. I think the staging saves this in so many ways, and it makes it so much more of a complex song and really makes the intention come through.
Let's talk about the lyrics and the the direction of the story. This is Alexander Hamilton's fatal flaw, isn't it?
The guy
who cannot shut up, and this sort of kicks off the tragic arc of the musical, I think. And I think the beautiful thing about this song is that in one breath, he looks very clearly at everything that happened in his past, all of the tragedy, the things that happened on St. Croix. Pronunciation is hard, everybody.
La Croix, darling.
St. Croix. everything that happened to him in the West Indies. And it's tragic, and he wrote his way, and he received all manner of grace. He received the blessings of charity from the people around him who sent him to New York. He received the grace, the blessings of just fortune and surviving when his mother died. And as Lynn points out in the Hamiltome, he draws exactly the wrong conclusion from everything that happened, as though he was solely responsible, as though grace and fortune and karma, if you will, didn't have a role in what happened to him.
It's the only song in the show also that I can think of off the top of my head where you really see something from one character's inner monologue. Burr works as the narrator, but he's not musing inside his own brain most of the time. He's speaking to us by proxy, as is King George.
I wonder if that's because this is one of the songs that is almost totally invented by Lynn. I feel like he looked at Hamilton's life and said, "The Reynolds pamphlet. Alexander, what are you doing? Why would you do that?" And then this is the song he had to put in to justify a character's crazy, crazy decision.
Well, you have to justify it in some way. Yeah. Otherwise, you're like, because everyone's saying, "Why did he do that?" Yeah, so let's try to figure out why he did that.
The audience has to come along for some reason when he almost torpedoes his marriage and torpedoes his political career. There's got to be something going on here to make the audience do anything other than just throw up their hands and say, "Oh, what an idiot."
Right. And if you can't do that in a musical with a song like this, then what good is a musical for?
Well, and I think the thread here that makes it palatable is that it's honesty.
Yes.
You know, he admits what he did. He understands that it's going to torpedo his career. But ultimately, you know, he needs to prove to everybody that he may cheat on his wife, but he is not cheating on America. And he would never do that to America. And he's willing to tell the truth about this other fault within him in order to prove his ultimate loyalty to this new nation, which is everything to him. And he's worked so hard to build the beginnings of.
Does he really believe that he's going to salvage his... I got the sense that he thought that this would salvage everything.
I don't think so. I think he knows his political career is toast after this. I just think his reputation as a patriot is the thing that's most important to him. He'll say it's his relationship to his wife, but that's not really it. His wife is America.
And he doesn't.
And that's what he wants to prove.
He doesn't say he's going to get back into the swing of politics, but he does say, "This is the only way I can protect my legacy." Mm-hmm. And it comes right after a chorus of people reminding him that history has its eyes on him.
Yeah. And in the previous song, he does say, I may have mortally wounded my prospects. So, yeah.
Yeah, he's got the long game here.
Which is the ultimate foreshadowing for Your Obedient Servant, where he's like, "No, I can't apologize. These are my words, man. My words mean everything."
Yeah.
Yeah.
"To thine own self be true, man."
Yep. If I'm honest, I can't apologize for that.
So it is kind of amazing alchemy, that honesty. That's what sort of redeems Hamilton in the audience's eyes. It certainly redeems it in my eyes, even as I'm sitting here going, you stupid idiot. There had to have been other ways. One of my favorite lines from I've committed the heresy of mentioning Babylon 5 during Pod for Ham before, but one of my favorite lines on that show is when a character says, in response to another character who says, I have no choice, is you only tell yourself you have no choice when you're trying to make yourself comfortable with the choice you've already made. This is the way I'm going to protect my legacy, says Hamilton, and let the chips fall where they may.
Yes, because apologize, that's not in his vocabulary.
And so Hamilton inflicts upon himself America's first sex scandal.
Oh, and Ham.
Damn.
Good job, dummy.
Rachel, you earlier questioned when I said that Hamilton drew the wrong conclusion or made the wrong choice. Could you unpack that a bit?
Well, that's exactly what I was just referring to when his choice to be honest about his affair in order to maintain his innocence as far as taking money from the treasury. I mean, that was the only decision that he could make. And I think that was I think the way he did it via a pamphlet and spreading it around was definitely flawed. He could have just said something to the other people that he was dealing with and not made it this as big a deal as it was. But I think that the choice was the only one that he could make if he wanted to maintain his legacy and his long-term reputation as one of the founding fathers.
Well, he tried that in the previous song. Like, at the end of We Know, they say, well, secrets get out, so maybe we won't keep this one. So even though the people in that room knew that he had been unfaithful to his wife, but probably hadn't, they may not have been convinced of it, but they no longer had evidence that he hadn't stolen any money from the government. That didn't seem to settle the problem, so he was going to have to tell the world.
Well, the reason that he met Aaron Burr in Weehawken is the same reason that he writes the Reynolds pamphlet. This is all about honor.
And it's all about reputation and legacy.
And either way, I guess he comes out with the legacy that's important to him more or less intact, but at such an amazing cost. And that's where I think Hamilton turns into almost a Shakespearean sort of tragic arc, is that he's doing the only thing he can, and it's going to end with, you know, all kinds of consequences for his marriage and an early death.
Right.
Well, yeah.
But no, Rachel's right, though. America's his wife. He would never cheat on America. And that's, above all, what he is trying to get across. He may have reason for shame, but it's not because he cheated on his actual wife, America.
America, you beautiful unfinished symphony you sent for me.
Yeah.
Yep. You all have convinced me that Alexander Hamilton had wives all over the place. Eliza, Angelica, America, he played the field.
But not Aunt Peggy.
No.
And he saved his legacy so well that right now, when his reputation is higher than it's ever been, including when he was alive, we still sit around saying, Hamilton, you idiot.
You fool.
You moron genius.
I was curious about sort of the end of this song with Burr and Eliza and Angelica coming in and the whole ensemble coming in, as opposed to it just being a solo. I thought it was interesting how they kind of help him justify his decision here.
Yeah.
Is that how you see what they're doing?
Well,
because I see them as begging him to stop.
That's what I see.
That's what I thought as well the Hamilton. And there are a couple of conflicting messages. And obviously, authorial intent's not the only thing going on here. But in the liner notes, Lin-Manuel has Burr saying, wait for it, wait for it. It's almost like, you know, in Phineas and Ferb, Phineas readying everybody for Ferb to say the really funny line or waiting for the explosion to go off. It's sort of a wait for it, wait for it, here it comes. When I first heard this song, I thought the ensemble was urging him to wait for it, slow down, don't do this dumb thing. And the other part of the ensemble is Eliza and Angelica and Mariah, strangely enough, saying, reminding Hamilton that history has its eyes on you. I think
in Hamilton's mind, they are encouraging him to be honest, but this is, again, his interior monologue, hearing what he wants to hear and what he believes to be true.
The one thing I don't like about the staging is at the very end, when he's getting ready to put down the Reynolds pamphlet, it's the figure of Mariah behind him, sort of handing him the thing. And that
I love that.
It almost for me, it evokes sort of this image of the fallen woman or the fallen temptress and sort of blaming it on her. And I'm not sure that I'm down with that.
I can see that part of, you know, putting it all on the woman, which as a woman I should not agree with. But again, Hamilton's mindset, I really like that one dramatic moment at the very end. Plus, I really love Mariah's costume. I'm obsessed with costumes in the show, so I like seeing it one more time.
Any final thoughts about Hamilton's impending demise as foreshadowed in Hurricane?
I like the symbolism of the song being called Hurricane and him singing about a hurricane representing his inner turmoil. Very gothic.
One costume note, because again, I'm obsessed with when I was looking through the Hamilton today, I noticed that at this moment in the show, as we move into what they call, you know, the four song movement of We Know and Hurricane, etc., Hamilton's costume color palette changed again. Now he's wearing a dark green velvet coat over the black velvet knickers, which he'll wear through the end of the show. So he's moving from the bright treasury green into a more subdued, darkened green. And he's sort of chameleon-like changing into the dark, sad, some would say idiotic, as we have said earlier, tragic figure character for a while. So it's very cool to watch all of his different coats and how they move throughout the show.
I love this song. I'm looking forward to hearing somebody else sing it and maybe do it justice, but I love the intricacies of it, and I love the inner reflection of it, and then the slow build toward the end.
And when next we come to you on Pod for Ham, consequences reveal themselves, and King George boogies across the stage a little bit. That'll be the Reynolds pamphlet next time on Pod for Ham. I'm Chip Sutterth with Casey Barber and Monty Ashley and Rachel Donner. Sorry, I got the surname order incorrect. We'll see you next time.
This is the eye of the hurricane. This is the only way I can protect my legacy.
Wait for it, wait for it, wait for it, wait.
The Reynolds pamphlet.